when Alistair told me that he's Scottish, we probably have somewhat related DNA because I have 80% Scottish DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was when finding out that out, it was an enriching experience to me because it's not very close in my family line. It must be six plus generations back, but I've inherited very much from that small part of my ancestry. I've inherited much of that DNA, and I just find it a very good value to be aware of, to honor one's ancestry, and being able to know about it, to respect it, and to honor it in a nice way, like the Chinese used to do. They had ancestry. They had a painting of their ancestors that they, before the Cultural Revolution, then most of it was burned by Mao, and they used to have these paintings hanging up on their walls, and was honoring them with lights and offerings, and I just find that to be something that we really miss in today's society. That respect for the previous generation and who you are. It's and therefore it's inspiring to see how you honor your background and your ancestry.
Yeah, no, it's very important.
Yeah,
it's where we are. Then without them, we wouldn't be here. You know. But I think I perhaps might have 80% Norwegian ancestry.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't know. I haven't done one of these tests, but there's something there.
Mm.
Something there. Irish as well. So there's this ancient highway, I think, about this. The migrations as well of people of the past. And they knew how to move around the world and knew how to sustain themselves from the landscape.
Mm.
So I mean, it's a big world out there.
Yeah,
and we do well to remember these things.
Mm.
Yeah, I think for myself, it hasn't been done consciously, but in my family, we always talked about how my grandfather painted, and you know, he has this, I don't know how big it is. Fair size of a known Norwegian painting that he copied from a little sticker, basically. And, you know, complete amateur, absolutely. But there was always this idea of how when I was drawing when I was young and starting to paint and so that I got it from him. And, of course, you could say, well, you know, there's no necessary causality there, but still it maybe has some kind of a grand perspective in it, to know that you are part of something that someone's done before, that you are, I guess it's what Jung is talking about, and that you are not just one, you are two. Well, I guess that he's talking about the shadow, but I mean, it's also when you get into some kind of a collective unconscious landscape, it's the sense of feeling to, you know, of belonging to a grander perspective is, I think, really rewarding and sort of gives you the, not necessarily the courage, but the drive to go forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's I think that's quite important.
Yeah, and this grander perspective, it also as you mentioned, it also affects how you live your own life, because it, in a way, it makes your own life more important, not necessarily because you, not only because you regard yourself as partly a product from the past, from your ancestry, but also because you know that you can have a certainty that the coming generations will have the same respect for you. Mm. And in that sense, it's quite a paradox that we live in in a society that one can say that life as a value in itself, in a way, like life, not the quality of life, but the keeping people alive, has perhaps never been as valued as today. We use so much capital on protecting people's lives, protecting people from dying. And of course, the corona situation is a good example of it, but it's a clear example of how we can degenerate life in order to protect life. Right. We can degenerate the quality of life and the in order to protect lives. And and it's paradoxical that in this simultaneously we know that when we die we get a tombstone and it will be taken care of, perhaps if we are lucky, by our children, and that's it. When our children get old or then die, they die, then it's the next, then they remove it and it's overgrown by weeds, and you are removed, and the photographs are sold on a flea market and not taken care of. And that does something to your own importance. Your life is not that important for the future.
Mm. Well, that's the thing about distinction between linear time, that Odd must be talking about linear time, and the more, what's called, circular time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if it's this one go, then it's just make the best out of it. It sort of appeals to the, high degree of social greed mm-hmm. in what you do. Mm. And I think it's, that's why I was so taken by Jung when he talks about this. Also this Protestant priests that have bought into this sort of complete lack of spirituality, basically, because the lack of images, the lack of eternity in it, it's just the words, right? And he talks about how these several examples of priests having this dream about that dark water that they fear, which is the subconscious or the collective unconscious that they are not in contact with anymore. Mm. And, also Campbell makes fun of it. How does it say it? It talks about how you work all day or the whole week, and then it's you go to church, etc., and then you're at you sort of live in the moment all the time, and then you're on the psychiatrist's couch wondering what the hell is wrong with you because there's no ground or perspective.
Mm. On the weekend,
yeah.
People live for the weekend, but. Mm. Yeah.
How would you describe the difference between linear mindset and a circular mindset?
I think there's like a racetrack. There's this goal. This is very focused on the future, mm-hmm. this progress, this something to immediately gain. This pushing, forcing. But the linear or the circular, is it's more relaxed. It's more, you can see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the kind of anxiety off. All of a sudden, you realize you're part of a continuum. You're part of nature. You can watch the seasons go round, as you know, watch the day go round, and There's an essence there. I don't know.
Mm. Which of those mindsets do you think is more not natural, but perhaps natural is the right word. Like one of them is more innate and natural, and the other one is more cultural, something that is more developed, what makes us human.
Hmm.
I'm not sure myself.
Well, one thing I'm thinking about, I don't know if this answers your question there, but I thought about that when we did the Dark Flame on the Mysterious Portrait by Gogol. And this painter Tchartkovy then is then sort of, you know, chooses or is taken by, how we want to say it, social greed to get acceptance. And I thought about it because, you know, that short story is so descriptive of the challenges that you face today as someone who's working with classical culture somehow, if you're a composer or a painter or whatever. Despite the fact that that short story is happening in an age which is the, let's say, 1820s, 30s, something like that. It's fairly specific. And then it struck me that he, you know, he talks about how these painters can get money and be celebrated, and why does he toil over his work and doesn't get celebrated, right? And that is in a situation where there's not a question of being classical figurative or a performance artist or something like that. The difference between what he does and what is accepted is much less than it is today. And that opened my mind to something that could be interesting to discuss. And I don't know if I'm drifting off of from what you're saying now, but so you think about that example. You think about a painter today who thinks the same way. Why are these people who start making, it can still be figurative, but it's indifferent, it's flat, it's ugly colors, clear colors, and bad drawing, etc. But then you also have that story about Sebastio del Piombo. So this is, it's the 15th, 16th century, right?
Who is that?
He, among other things, he assisted Michelangelo. Michelangelo would make drawings and then he would paint them and they would get high worth because the idea, the invention was from Michelangelo. Mm. Beautiful arrangement, I think. And he then gets a position as a friar or something like that. So at a certain point in his career, that means he can get all the money he wants, all the food he wants, all the women he wants. And then Vasari talked, I've mentioned this before, says that he had to be dragged to his work as if to his death. And that to me makes it even more interesting for us today, because I do think it ties up to your question about linear or circular time. Suddenly then, your choice in the face of this, oh, here's this celebrated performance artist or whatever it is, you know, which is miles away, that is psychologically and technically speaking, the exact same thing as happens with Sebastio del Piombo in the Renaissance, where those values are, mildly speaking, accepted. Still that happens. Still he finds money, food, women, then he forgets his work totally. And my point is that the challenge that we face today is not, we cannot just, you know, what's the word? We cannot blame it on the situation where, oh, our values are not accepted. You know, there's something that you can lean too much on it. Because the level behind that is your choice to react when you see that person, whatever that person does, when that person gets success, what are you going to do about it? Mm. Or not do about it, right? That is the primal question at hand there.
Yeah, I think it's like there's a carrot and a stick, you know. So we want the success, so we go after the carrot. But then when we get the carrot, there's no impetus to keep working. So that's maybe you fall into that trap where he doesn't want to work because he has all of his needs, maybe superficially, because he's looking at that maybe linear track. He has a goal and he's achieved the goal. It dissipates.
Yeah, that's it. I think linear track.
Yeah, but I don't think there's necessarily such a separation from the linear track within the circle, because if you zoom in to a piece of the circle, it's a straight line or straight-ish.
Like the horizon.
You know, it can appear straight, but it's actually maybe the circular perspective is just zooming out and seeing, you know, as some kind of death and rebirth principle rather than just focusing on this life and I want this. It's, you know, taking a step back.
So
maybe, like, I don't know, both are natural. We need
both.
Well,
obviously, yeah.
You know.
Or maybe both are cultural in a way. If if regarding Aristotle talked about three ways of life, how do you say that in English? The pleasurable way, the one just for physical pleasure and satisfaction, like the hedonistic way of life, and the political way of life, and the theoretical way of life. And of course, typically him, he disregards the hedonistic way of life. It's like that's not the way to have a meaningful life. But then he says that the political life is one step further, it's better. And that could be regarded as it's one step into the more cultural sphere. But then he said, but yet there are, and I would say that's the linear way of life. But he says, but there are a lot of traps there that you can become obsessed with honor and recognition and all
the
those.
The persona.
But then you have the theoretical view. And of course, there are so many interpretations on what he means with that. It's obviously that he regards the philosopher as living the perfect way of life, but being solely theoretical. But I think you also can regard it as theoretical in the sense of caring about the eternal values that are not about society, the political way of life, and thus it can appear as being more primal, but it's because you care then about eternal values such as family or friendship. But then again, it could also be regarded as the high point of life, the more the circular way, because
That's you're talking about the ethics now, Nicomachean ethics, right? And I think my takeaway from that for me, of course, I should read it again, but is when how does he define it? There's that distinction between knowing a lot and being wise. And being wise is to know what is good for yourself. So it's a idea which is very close to Ayn Rand's idea of the rational egoism, right? Not just me now, but long-term thinking. And I think that's where you can learn or learn the same thing from different sources. So, for example, have you guys read Epictetus? Roman, Stoic, he was a freed slave, and he had, how was it? Was something about his foot, he had a limp or something was wrong. And so he has this little book, I don't know what it's called, it's quite short, with quotes and stuff. And it talks about how you need to be aware of I'm trying to translate from Norwegian. Those things over which you can rule or govern, or over which you have control, or the things you over which you do not have control. To start there, right? So you don't waste your life worrying about things over which you do not have control. Now, of course, there's an important distinction here, because you might think you do not have control over certain things just because you haven't tried enough. So that's a little, you know, thing to remember. I mean, when you're, this is the topic for all those movies, right? This guy loses everything, his wife leaves him, everything goes wrong, and there's nothing there, and he has to pay the bills, and then he loses the job, and, you know, and how do you go from there? And that those are the things, of course, that we are attracted to. And so this thing about knowing what you can do something about and what you cannot do something about, and of course what relation do they have to each other. And there's also a something that Nietzsche is talking about in the Zarathustra about how does he say it? Even virtue should not be regarded as a pay in itself. So there's something impersonal to the whole situation, or should be. Some kind of an idea of disinterest, which is a dangerous term to use, but there is something there, that it's not personal, all the things that happen to you. There's something about having a grander, longer-term perspective, right? Because the minute you start getting disappointed about not having been accepted, and not getting what you see as what you deserve. Of course, again, this is also very dangerous, because it's not about giving totally up and letting people tread all over you. But Aristotle talks about trying to go to the opposite of what you are to end up in the middle. So maybe people should try to be more indifferent to social gain, so that they might end up in the middle where they can judge when they should act on behalf of social gain, because they have to pay their bills, and when they shall not be socially eager.
Kierkegaard writes very nicely, I think, when he states that one should live in eternity, but still hear the clock chime. You cannot live completely in eternity. You need to be able to pay your bills and to know that you are in the present, but living in eternity still.
I think it's just like, don't just clutch on, like, don't be so afraid, let the fear and the kind of victim mentality take over, that there's this lack and you need to hold on harder. Find what you can do, you know, and trust that you pursue that. There's something that happens there where things unfold, and kind of, you could say it's quite mysterious, but, you know, that you just trust yourself and the steps will become clear, rather than saying, you know, I want to go to the mountain, the top of the mountain, but, you know, you don't look in front of you where you're going. You can't see, you know. It happened to me today, actually. I was out for a walk and I was wandering around these rocks on the coast, and I was so taken by the rocks and the islands there. I was like, wow. And I didn't see. Luckily, I had a stick that there was this crevice and I missed it. And thankfully, like in an instinct, I had to leap across this, maybe half a meter. It was a couple of meters drops. Yeah. I was like,
God.
Yeah, I could have seriously hurt myself for not just looking too far away, you know.
Yeah.
Not being conscious to, you know, take care.
Yeah, it's always this situation where you have some possibilities in the time, and this thing about not being caught by it. I mean, we talked about that earlier today, right, in the morning meeting, about, having sort of the mysterious portrait as a background here. I just thought about Shostakovich. I always come back to him. Sitting in that panel in New York, and of course there's this bureaucratic mouse that follows him and notes whatever everything he's saying. And he's being accused of supporting Stalin and helping this tyrannical regime. And he knows that if he says anything wrong, then his family is gone before he comes back. So you cannot say that he is being, or it's maybe a bit too easy to say that he's being opportunistic and doesn't have a spine, because he has his family to take care of and to regard. So he could then make film music for Stalin and different things for Stalin, and still not get lost. I also think of, we talked about Dickens quite a few times, about Oliver Twist, who is taken in by this gang with Fagin. Mm. And Oliver Twist, of course, helps them do this stealing, or is part of that gang, but he is never, his soul is really never colored by it. So there's that situation too, where you can use some opportunities in your time to make that money without being, doing it with this greed or this sort of, I might be accepted if I do it the right way or say the right things. Right?
Keep it to bread and butter.
Yes, yeah, so, well, it's, I think Sebastian has been talking about that, yeah. Right? Or who was it? Rather get a job at a grocery store than to sacrifice your talent to satisfy whatever is going on right now.
And it's that illustrates how complicated this is. This view of a circular understanding of time and a linear, because there are people who are very much into or interested in what has happened in the past, but as being past, not as something that is relevant today. Mm. And I think that's the main difference, because you can see most criticism that comes to that comes from people towards Civilization magazine, the magazine I run on classic culture, it's not from so-called modernists. It's from people who are very interested in the past. Usually older people, but not to label anything.
But they are older.
Yes, and are very upset with the way that history is regarded, because it's supposed to be regarded as history. So, for instance, they can say like, "Well, I'm an old and wise man, and I don't think that it's anything good with looking." With idealizing the past, because that's how they regard it as when finding
that's
eternal,
a mistake they did made.
Yeah,
as younger.
Yes, probably. And they use examples like, oh, Michelangelo would not have liked this because he was progressive, and then again to the definition that you made of linear understanding, it's this view of progress that we are progressing, and therefore history is history and relevant only insofar as it is regarded as history.
If you want to see the entire segment, head over to caveofapelles.com/subscribe and become a $5 patron today. Watch all our conversations or shuffle through the Cave of Apelles audio playlist by becoming a member today at caveofapelles.com/subscribe.